You're listening to the Midwest Indie Media Center podcast, featuring the news, views, and opinions of the press peoples, regionally and from around the world. This is the Midwest Indie Media Center radio podcast. Welcome everybody, this is Zach Wright, and you're listening to the Midwest In Media Radio Hour. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to the broadcast and or the podcast of this radio program. I'd also like to thank KDX Radio. You can check them out via Google KDX Radio, as well as our other station, Berkeley Liberation Radio, for their continuing support and regularly broadcasting the Midwest Indie Media Radio Hour. This week's show is going to be a little bit different. Last week, I had to take a hiatus due to the fact that we weren't hardly getting any news sources, so therefore, I had to take a week off myself and recuperate from all the horrifying news bits that's been going around in the last few days, actually. I'm going to be talking about the climate crisis in Copenhagen, as well as what's going on in the Middle Eastern areas. So we have some news coming from East Jerusalem, and also we have news coming from various other things. Healthcare is one of our other things we'll be talking about here on this week's program, and just so many more things. Once again, this is the Midwest Indie Media Radio Hour. I'm Zach Riot, and we're going to start the show after this song.
I expressed it, my words manifested, my destiny is set when I put my soul on records. It's all me, it's my song, I respect it, neglect those who try to put hate in my direction. I rest with my pride, conceived thoughts, I write it, it's my life, my rhymes, don't give a fuck what you like. I fly high in the sky, my mind is at peace, it runs free, kinda like the Mississippi River. I stand and deliver, whether it's the summer or the winter, a sack representer. You hate me, you hate, hating ain't my agenda. I keep it moving, this ain't a movement, no hyphy, go dumb and shooting. It's real music, don't get confused with your battle on the corner, you lose quick, no loose grips, no talent ass, having all about cash grabbing. I stay true to this rapping, I stay true, how about you? It's all you, the truth will set you free. Don't be another one of them lying MCs. Just work what you got, everybody's gotta start somewhere. Give props, spread love,
hate will get you nowhere. Yeah, I ain't doing shows, I perform in bedroom studios. My opportunities are low. When you lose your mind, you lose your goal. And when you lose your heart, you lose your soul. I let it go, let it be like Lennon and Ringo. I've been in the same boat before, I stay afloat, sink. No, I slang soul for bankrolls, staying focused. Take notice, unsigned, unhyped, rhyme game, sunshine, whatever the time frame. I'm in the red, waiting for the light to turn green. The only thing moving is my records turn ing back in reverse, trying to catch some words that I missed last. Listen, I heard that I'm unheard, I burn tracks without permission. The truth hurts, I hurt back, step into my position. Watch your bones crack from all the whack shit I be lifting up. And I'll be lifting up.
It's all you, the truth will set you free. Don't be another one of them lying MCs. Just work what you got, everybody's gotta start somewhere.
Give props,
spread love,
hate will get you nowhere.
Oh,
Welcome back, everybody. You listen to the Midwest Indie Media Radio Hour. I am your host, once again, Zach Wright. And we begin today's show on the collapse of the climate control. The climate justice advocates demand a deal, but COP15 is a meltdown. Civil society, NGOs, island nations, and nations from the global south all demanded a FAB, which is a fair, ambitious, binding deal from this month's COP15 climate summit in Copenhagen. But as the summit concluded Friday, the only proposals on the table were none of the above. Some world leaders remained at the summit well past midnight, hashing out a document many are calling a cop out. Others, such as President Obama, scurried to the airport to escape the climate crime scene that is Copenhagen's Bella Center. At 2 a.m. inside the center, dozens of people chanting "Climate Justice Now" held pictures of Obama with climate shame printed across his forehead. The mass movement for climate justice on the streets of Copenhagen was predictably met with brutal force by Danish police. Even accredited delegates were savagely beaten back with batons while attempting to walk out the Bella Center. In response, a call for solidarity actions prompted demonstrations worldwide. In Minneapolis, for instance, a small group marched for climate justice on Nicollet Mall Friday night, just before the start of the city's popular Holidazzle parade. Solidarity reports from other U.S. IMCs. You can check them out via Houston and also the Bay Area, and also in Washington, D.C. For more information on that bit. But back into this, in Minneapolis, it seems that the Minneapolis Vigil, where there was 15 to 20 people, first gathered outside the street-facing studio WCCO, which is a network that regularly features climate deniers. And when the WCCO prompted, blocked its windows so that climate justice advocates wouldn't contaminate the background of the evening news, the activists took to the street between the hundreds of people lined up to watch the holidazzle. With a chance of drawing the connections between climate change, a boasted military budget, and a bank bailout, the message was a stark contrast to the glitzy overconsumption and energy use of the city's holiday parade. The march began it all the way to the end of the parade route at the downtown library with zero interference from the police. And this prompted the question of the potential impact if more had attended on a night which was warmer than most of December thus far, given the urgency of climate justice demonstrations at the COP15 and resurgence in U.S. climate organizing such as through the Group 350. One couldn't be blamed to find the turnout Friday discouraging, with the United States and Canada the lead perpetrators of derailing the Denmark talks. Any sort of action within North America, which is a crucial step towards preserving the existence of southern nations and indigenous peoples worldwide. Now, earlier this week in Denmark, arrested activists noted that at the so-called climate prison in Valby, where many of the detainees there had been held, in addition to the hundreds arrested in kettles and preemptive raids, including nearly 1,000 during last Saturday's 100,000-strong demonstration alone, one report estimated that 15 to 20 organizers were still being held on more serious charges. One of these organizers is a well-known anarchist from Denver who has been remained for the trial in January. Before the final negotiating sessions on Thursday and Friday, nearly all the accredited delegates from civil society were unceremoniously booted from the convention center, making it clear that the resulting failure of politicians to reach a deal rests solely on the shoulders of the wealthy and privileged. The deal, or the Copenhagen Accord, that Danes have been keen to get, promises nothing Well, it acknowledges a maximum of 2-degree temperature rise targets. It makes no proposals on emissions reductions and contains nothing that is binding, wrote a poster to Indie Media Denmark. The proposed agreement earlier Saturday morning sought to provide $30 billion to poor countries from 2010 all the way up to 2012 to adapt to climate change. A paltry sum compared to war spending and a rejection of what the Global South had asked for, justice, reparations, not charity. It also cut pretty much the previous goal of reducing CO2 emissions by 80% by 2050. And also that the accord is little more than the rhetoric hiding a failure to actually address the climate crisis, said Michael Dorsey of the Climate Justice Now, which is a network late Friday, which basically set their network late Friday night from Copenhagen. Quote, "This destructive accord represents a death sentence for Africa, the Amazon, indigenous peoples, and a small island nations. An accord is secretly crafted without the participation of developing countries is another example of the U.S. using its power to manipulate the outcome with no binding commitments," said Tom Goldtooth, who's an executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Quote, "We are highly suspicious of tactics of the U.S. Indigenous peoples here in Copenhagen have been demanding action, but false hopes and empty promises. And these delays and bullying tactics amount to continued carbon colonialism." And also Camila Moreno of the Global Justice Ecology Project from Porto Alegre, Brazil, said that the COP15 had seen an obscene amount of lobbying by emerging corporate carbon dealers who are peddling false solutions, while the oil and coal lobbies are still the elephant in the room. The common sense solutions that have been demanding the social movements and civil society around the world are to leave fossil fuels in the ground and to make a deal that is legally binding. Today's developments do nothing to move those real solutions forward and could wipe entire nations off the map. Now, you guys may be asking yourself, what do we do now? The following expected failure of the COP15 conference to provide or to produce any binding commitment to tackle climate change is increasingly clear that we need global systematic change. Bolivia, G77 leaders and others inside the COP15 Belo Center had protested the fake deal. In fact, there is no deal at all. The question remains, what now for climate justice? What now? Well, as I've noted before, this whole thing was false. You know, like the whole meeting was fake. I was basically watching Democracy Now! Previously, a week prior to this news bit, and they had a leader from Tuvalu come through and try to gain access to the Belo Center, state his case on the fact of the matter that his country in Tuvalu, which is a small Pacific, is a country, is based out of the small area in the the Pacific Ocean, rather, their country may be swallowed up due to rising sea levels. And it's just sad to see that so many countries, especially around the Fiji areas, which is where Tuvalu and many other countries are today, they may be swallowed up due to rising sea levels. And it has to do with the fact that our climate is rising, and even say by 2 to 3 degrees can cause a rapid amount of sea level rise, and it's just going to swallow up small little communities that are going around throughout the world. So you're going to see less land and more water, and there's going to be droughts in certain areas. There's going to be basically an increase in harsher storms as well. and people are protesting this. I mean, if we have the knowledge and basically the go ahead and basically the tools to do so, why don't we go ahead and change for a better world? That's just kind of my opinion on this. It's just very dangerous to continue going on. Like, this is like another okey-doke situation. I mean, it's just, once again, I really feel that, especially here in the United States, with our president, our lame duck president, basically, he went up and did a speech not too long ago where he basically overshadowed a lot of things where protesters were saying, but then again, he couldn't walk the walk. You know, if you're going to talk the talk, you have to walk the walk. And it goes the same thing for Canada as well. Leaders going through, and they're agreeing with a lot of what these protesters and a lot of different environmental groups are saying. But then again, they don't decide to put a deal on the table saying that, yes, we're going to go ahead and cut emissions. We're going to go ahead and cut our carbon footprinting. And United States and China were kind of going head to head. And China is just kind of watching and seeing if the United States was actually going to put a deal in saying that they're going to cut their carbon footprint and try to use more science and technology to, have to wean themselves slowly off gasoline and natural gas. But it's pretty sad to hear about this. All right, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back to this program. And when I'm coming back, I'd like to talk about the Minnesotan activist who was arrested to be deported for solidarity work in occupied East Jerusalem. You are listening to the Midwest Indie Media Radio Hour. I'm your host, Zach Riot.
Yeah. Every day I try to walk right, talk right. I grab mics, I make them spotlight. The brightest stars in the dark night. I know I may not make it far, but these bars might. So I put my train of thought for a long ride, the raw type. Battle MCs caught in a bar fight. Can't keep running, you see, I'm on the far side of town. Of course, I'm bound to in through my foresight. Lost and found, descendants of a lost tribe, a short flight. But time's moving the fast. Travel at the speed of light, but can't live in the past. Can't bring it back to the feelings of experience past. Study the past and see my future is as simple as that. Going back and forth, memories make me laugh some more. Forgetting my black ass is poor, my glass is half empty. That can't help me, damn right, I'm gonna make sure that glass gets full. I can't go back.
I bring it back to them good days, the days were good. Should it go back and take back what is good? All I have is my memory that takes me to the past to build a future with my history too. I see life as a spark, they gon' get me now. Opening my eyes like a born baby, ain't I realize that the world gone crazy, but gotta stay focused, grounded with the earth in touch. Looking past that great ones did so much. I call up on my ancestors to stay in touch. It's just the love that you have for living life. If you were living right, and I come back right. So I reflect on the reasons of deep in night. Sharing street heights when the biggest flip the light. Light it up, pass it on, peace, love, respect. Give it up, bring it on, bring it back.
Yeah, can't go back in time. I'll never listen, go back in the mind.
Can't reel up, rewind.
Back to a good place where there's no hate. With love in the face of tomorrow, I can wait to meet a new day like yesterday. Yesterday was great, I saw the children play. Grandmothers paving the way, now we walk the road. Walk with them, cause every day they give us hope. Talk with my dad, cause we play the same notes. Ride with my moms till the day she grow old. Bring it back.
Back, forth. They say time is the master. That's where the mystery lies. That's why I navigate the history lines. I document my story. You can look at my rhymes. Another page, another chapter in the book of my lives. Can't go back to them old days. Can't keep us trapped in them old ways. Like time passed and there's no change. I'm on the right path to fight it at the old age. Why I ride it on a slow pace. Can't go back.
Bring it back. Back in time, I'll never listen, go back in the mind.
Can't reel up, rewind.
Bring it back.
Can't go back in time. I'll never listen, go back in the mind. Can't reel up, rewind.
Bring it back. Welcome back, everybody. For those that just tuned in, you are listening to the Midwest Intermediate Radio Hour. I'm your host once again, Zach Wright, back here in the studio, and I'm gonna pick up where I left off. We were just talking about the big COP 15 and basically the meltdown, what happened there. Of course, as you know, United States, Canada, and of course, just about nearly every rich country in the world is backing out of a deal. Especially the 350 deal, you know, of trying to lessen the carbon footprint so people in smaller islands can live. That's what we were talking about just earlier for those that just tuned in. And right about now, I want to get into some news from Minnesota, where there was an activist who was arrested and he is to be deported back to East Jerusalem. Imprisoned American citizen and Minnesota resident Ryan Olander to be deported to the U.S. after being arrested in Sheikh Jarrah, which is an occupied East Jerusalem, while it's visiting Palestinian family whose house has been taken over by Israeli settlers. Ryan was visiting the Al-Kurds in a tent of the Palestinian family built in their own backyard. The recent settled takeover of a section of their house at 1:15 p.m. where six Israeli police walked into the tent where Ryan was talking to the family members and drinking tea and took him for questioning at the Russian compound police station in West Jerusalem. From the Givon prison in Ramleh, where Mr. Erlander is currently awaiting his deportation hearing, he reported that on Friday of the 18th of December, quote, "I was placed under arrest illegally. A police officer forcibly removed me from the Alkurd private residence and proceeded to file a malicious police report stating that I participated in what they claimed was an illegal demonstration and refused to disperse when ordered. In fact, I was arrested before the demonstration even took place. I have been a target of the police for standing in the solidarity with the Palestinians of Sheikh Jarrah, who struggle against the unjust and illegal evictions from the places they have called their homes for nearly 60 years. Now I face illegal deportation from Israel." His arrest happened just before a peaceful demonstration of around 300 people held in solidarity with evicted Palestinian residents of Sheikh Jarrah was violently dispersed by Israeli police, followed by a violent dispersal of familiar demonstration the previous week. The police blocked all entrances to Sheikh Jarrah in an attempt to prevent protesters from accessing the Palestinian neighborhood and use unprecedented forces against those who succeeded in reaching the Al-Kurd and Gawi family houses that are currently occupied by Israeli settlers. 26 Israeli protesters were arrested, three of them wearing clown costumes. Similarly, last week, the police used a section of the Al-Kurd house previously taken over by settlers to detain the arrested demonstrators. Ryan, along with other arrestees from Sheikh Jarrah, reported ill treatment by the police, who subjected them to several strip searches, denied them food and water for prolonged periods of time, and held them outside the police station until late at night with insufficient protection against the cold conditions. Unlike the 26 arrested Israeli citizens who were brought in front of the judge, Ryan was released by the police before the beginning of the trial on Saturday, 19th of December, only to be illegally rearrested by immigration police right outside of the same police station that told him he was free to go. The police have used the same tactics previously, when three foreign nations who were arrested at a peaceful demonstration, Sheikh Jarrah, on 11 court hearing held in the Russian compound the following day, only to be illegally arrested against and taken straight from the courtroom to a deportation facility. All three were released the following morning, over 40 hours after their initial arrest. For more information, go to ISM Media Office, which is the Occupied Palestinian, 054-344-2512. Flo Rozowski, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Call this number, 612-850-4942. For more background information on the Sheikh Jarrah, is that approximately 475 Palestinian residents live in the Karm al-Jarni, neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, which is located directly north of the old city, face imminent eviction from their homes in the manner of Hanaun and Gawi families, and the Al-Kurd family before them. All 28 families are refugees from 1948, mostly from the West Jerusalem and Haifa, whose houses in Sheikh Jarrah were built in and given to them through a joint project between the United Nations Relief and Works Agency and the Jordanian government in 1956. So far, the settlers took over houses of four Palestinian families, displacing around 60 residents, including 20 children. At present, settlers occupy all of these houses, and the whole area is patrolled by army private security 24 hours a day. The evicted Palestinian families, some of whom have been left without suitable alternative accommodation since August, continue to protest against the unlawful eviction from the sidewalk across the street from their homes, facing regular violent attacks from the settlers and harassment from the police. The Gawi family, for example, and their only shelter, which is a small tent built near their house, destroyed by the police and their belongings stolen 5 times. In addition, the Al-Kurd family has been forced to live in an extremely difficult situation, sharing the entrance gates and the backyard of their house with the extremist settlers, who occupied a part of the Al-Kurd home in December of 2009. The settlers subject the Palestinian family to regular violent attacks and harassment, making their life a living hell. The ultimate goal of the settler organizations is to evict all Palestinians from the area and turn it into a new Jewish settlement, and to create a Jewish continuum that will effectively cut off the old city, form the northern Palestinian neighborhoods. On the 28th August of 2008, Nahalat Shimon International filed a plan to build a series of 5- and 6-story apartment blocks, the town plan scheme, and the Jerusalem Local Planning Commission. If TPS 12705 comes to pass, the existing Palestinian houses in this key area would be demolished. About 500 Palestinians would be evicted, and 200 new settler units would be built for a new settlement at Shimon HaTzadik. Implanting new Jewish settlements in East Jerusalem and the West Bank is illegal under many international laws, including Article 49 of the 4th Geneva Convention, which is the plight of Gawi, Al-Kurd, and the Hanan families is just a small part of Israel's ongoing campaign of ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people from East Jerusalem. Now, the eviction orders is issued by Israeli courts and are a result of claims made in 1967 by the Sephardic Community Committee and a Knesset Yisrael Association, which since sold their claim to the area Nahalat Shimon. The settler organizations, whose aim is to take over the whole area using falsified deeds, the land dating back to 1875. In 1972, these two settler organizations applied to have the land registered in the names with Israel Land Administration. Their claim to ownership was noted in the land registry. However, it was never made into an official registry of title. The first Palestinian property in the area was taken over at this time. The case continued in the courts for another 37 years. Amongst other developments, the first lawyer of the Palestinian residents reached an agreement with the settler organizations in 1982 without the knowledge of consent of the Palestinian families, in which he recognized the settlers' ownership in return for granting families the legal status of protecting tenants. This affected 23 families and served as a basis for future court and eviction orders, including the Al-Kurd family house takeover in December of 2009. Despite the immediate appeal filed by the family's new lawyers, furthermore, a Palestinian landowner, Suleiman Darwish Hijazi, has legally challenged the settlers' claims. In 1994, he presented documents certifying his ownership of the land to the courts, including tax receipts from 1927, which, in addition, the new lawyer of the Palestinian residents located a document providing the land in Sheikh Jarrah had never been under Jewish ownership. The Israel courts rejected these documents. Now, the first eviction orders were issued in 1999 based on the still disputed agreement from the 1982. As a result, the two Palestinian families, which the Hanan and the Gawi, were evicted in February of 2002. After the 2006 Israeli Supreme Court finding that the settler committee's ownership of the lands were uncertain, and the lands settlement officer of the court requesting that the ILA remove their names from the lands registrar, the Palestinian families returned back to their homes. The courts, however, failed to recognize new evidence presented to them and continued to issue eviction orders based on decisions from 1982 and 1999, respectively. Further, evictions filed in November of 2008 of the Kamal al-Kurd family, and in August of 2009 from the Hanoun and Ngawi families for the second time. An uninhabited section of the house belonging to the al-Kurd family was taken over by settlers on the 1st of December of 2009. Now, speaking even further on this is commentary from the Dissident Voice, which is an independent media outlet, which is also a blog that focuses on many things, including healthcare and the ongoing conflict in the Middle East between the Palestinians and Israelis. This one is entitled The American-Israeli War on Gaza. And this states that 1 year ago of today, that the Israel launched Operation Cast Lead, a murderous full-scale military assault on the small, densely populated and defenseless Gaza Strip. The operation resulted in the massacre of over 1,300 Palestinians, the vast majority civilians, included hundreds of children. This also included only those killed directly by military attacks. The actual casualty figure from Israel's policies towards Gaza, which including the number of deaths attributed to this ongoing siege of the territory, is unknown. The official pretext for the operation given by Israel and parroted unquestioningly in Western media is that Israel has responded with force as an act of self-defense against to an onslaught of rocket attacks against southern Israel from the Hamas and other immigrant groups in Gaza. Now, even if this were true, nations were acting in self-defense against armed attacks must respect international law designed to protect civilians in time of war. Israel flagrantly violated the Geneva Conventions and other relevant treaties governing the use of force during the course of this operation, continuing numerous war crimes. But the stated pretext itself does not stand up to scrutiny. 6 months prior to the assault on Gaza, Israel, Hamas, had agreed to create a ceasefire under the terms of truce agreement. Hamas would end its rocket attacks against Israel, and Israel would similarly cease attacks against Palestinians in Gaza and lift its siege on the territory. Hamas, for its part, lived up to its obligations under the truce. It fired no rockets into Israel and actively pressured other groups to similarly refrain from launching attacks. Israel, on the other hand, never lived up to its obligations under the truce. From the beginning, Israel declared a security zone on Gaza's side of the border, and Israeli soldiers repeatedly violated their truce by firing at the Palestinians, guilty of merely trying to access their own land. Now, as you remember, our producer was just talking about how they're doing these wrongful evictions, and they're destroying this Geneva order that was placed amongst them. This is just something to think about for you guys out there listening. Now, also into this, is that Israel has never eased its siege of Gaza. Israel controlled, and still to this day, continues to control the borders of Gaza, its airspace and its coast, and implementing a near total blockade, including preventing by force the delivery of humanitarian goods into the territory. Now, rather than easing the siege, Israel continued to let in only minimal amounts of humanitarian supplies, which is a practice that also continued to this very day. Just enough to prevent a total humanitarian catastrophe, thus keeping the population of Gaza in a state of desperation and on the verge of human limits, with untold consequences on the health and mental well-being of the Palestinians. The complete breakdown of the truce agreement came on November 4th, when Israel launched airstrikes and a ground incursion into Gaza, killing 4 Palestinians. This violation of ceasefire resulted in its active undoing. Israel's official reason for the attack was it claimed that militants were digging a tunnel under the border. The more credible explanation, however, was that Israel wanted to provoke Hamas into launching rockets and thus far claim a pretext for the full-scale military assault that Israel had at that time, by its own account, already had been planning. Indeed, from the beginning of the truce, it appeared that Israel's intent was to provoke a violent response in order to claim a pretext for its military assault. While Hamas scrupulously observed the ceasefire, Israel took deliberate actions to undermine it. Besides those already noted, Israel has stepped up operations against Palestinians in the West Bank, such as the assassination of members of Islamic Jihad shortly after announcement of the truce. Islamic Jihad militants in Gaza responded to that incident by firing more rockets into Israel. But Hamas criticized the attacks and pressured Islamic Jihad to cease, including with the threat of arrest, and a tenuous truce continued to hold for a time. A greater and more provocative action was necessary in order to completely undermine the truce. Israel's November 4th attack proved to be that action. From that day forward, the so-called ceasefire consisted of tit-for-tat attacks on a daily basis, with Israel launching repeated attacks on Gaza and Hamas and other militant groups launching rockets into Israel. Israel had achieved that pretext that it was looking for in order to gain the political cover necessary to wage its assault on the civilian population of Gaza. And make no mistake, the Operation Cast Lead was a war on the civilian population, an extremely murderous act of collective punishment. The death toll itself stands as an undeniable testament to that, but with the manner in which Israel waged its operation as also leaves no doubt as to its true objective. As already noted, Israel claims its operation was designed to end rocket attacks, which in truth, it was Israel that deliberately violated and undermined the truce. Israel also claims its operation was aimed at militants, as evidence of its respect for international law and extraordinary effort to prevent the loss of innocent life. Israel notes the fact that it dropped thousands of leaflets on Gaza prior to its operations, warning civilians to flee the oncoming assault. But in fact, this is not the evidence of Israel's respect for innocent life, but rather strong evidence that its killing of civilians was deliberately and intended. For starters, civilians told to flee had nowhere to go. No place in Gaza was safe from Israel's attacks. Furthermore, in some cases, civilians were told to go to city centers, and after many had done so, those same locations were then purposely bombed by Israel. Israel's claimed respect for innocent life is also belied by its means of indiscriminate warfare. Israel heavily bombarded civilian population centers. It deliberately and systematically targeted civilian locations with protected status under international law, including schools and also hospitals. Israel also used indiscriminate weaponry, including white phosphorus munitions. The use of white phosphorus is permitted under international law for illuminating the battlefield or creating smoke screens. However, its use is an incendiary weapon. It is also a chemical weapon, in that its incendiary effect is a result of chemical reaction. It is a violation of international law and a war crime, particularly when used indiscriminately against populated areas and civilian locations such as schools, as it was in Gaza. Now, moreover, Israel demonstrated extreme contempt for and defiance to the United Nations and international community by deliberately targeting UN sites within Gaza. It targeted UN clinics, schools, and other compounds. Israel attacked humanitarian convoys attempting to deliver much-needed supplies to desperate people of Gaza, and in other cases prevented medical teams, including the International Committee of the Red Cross, which is also called the ICRC, from reaching victims of its assaults, also a war crime. Israel also deliberately targeted a UN warehouse where humanitarian supplies were being stored. Attacking a site with white phosphorus munitions, resulting in the warehouse and goods inside catching fire and nearly burning to the ground. All of these actions by Israel, as well as documented and uncontrovertible, constitute grave war crimes under the Geneva Conventions and other relevant treaties of international law. Also in news, the Senate speech heralds a new social movement. If you do only one more political thing this year, as we put 2009 to bed, rest in peace. Let it be to listen to Bernie Sanders on the floor of the United States Senate speak about the healthcare reform, which boosts out corporate greed. Sanders' speech is being heralded in the new social movement, and this couldn't come out at a better time, folks. For 2009, reflect for just a minute on all the garbage we have been subjected to pertaining to the healthcare reform, and realize that from the start of the campaign has been designed by the corporate greedy who literally buy reform and makes a lot, makes them looks with lots and lots more money. Profit over people wins again. The campaign for healthcare reform loses. But out of it, we have the new social movement. Let us do put 2009 to bed and permanently behind us, as it has been a horrible year. However, we deserve to end it on a high note. We need this. If you do only one more political thing this year, listen to Bernie Sanders' uplifting speech describing a wonderful vision for 2010. Not a campaign, a movement. In solidarity, West Brain Chair, Southern Oregon, Jobs with Justice, carry on. Senate speech heralds new social movement by Margaret Flowers and also Annie Cotes. Is this week with sincere effort of millions of people across the nation once again proved effective in the face of determined opposition from the White House and Congress, as single-payer healthcare reform reached another milestone in its historic journey. When the Senate initiated its debate on health insurance reform, Senator Bernie Sanders offered a single-payer amendment with co-sponsors Sherrod Brown and Roland Burris. Initially, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid skipped over it, allowing other amendments to come to the floor instead. But nationwide events on the International Human Rights Day, the delivery of papers bodies to the Senate offices, nonviolent civil disobedience, including 9 arrests at Senate Schumer's office, and hundreds of thousands of emails and phone calls and faxes to the Senate evidently changed Reid's mind. When Sanders introduced his amendment to the senator from Oklahoma, Dr. Coburn rose according to the rules of the Senate to insist that the bill be read in full. It was estimated that reading the 767-page bill would take days, stalling and galloping Senate process. We wondered, could this be an unexpected gift? If Senator Lieberman could make an intransigent stand on behalf of the insurance companies, would Sanders make a stand on behalf of the health of the people? Reading the bill would prompt our movement to swing into action yet again. We would invite the nation to tune into C-SPAN to hear how a national single-payer health system would provide comprehensive, high-quality health care to all citizens. Yet Coburn's maneuver had its effect. Reid demanded that Sanders withdraw the amendment. For the Senate timetable leading up to the Christmas, could not be delayed. Besides insurance reform, this was a pressing issue of funding the wars. Within 3 hours, Sanders agreed. In return, he got 30 minutes on the Senate floor. Sanders' speech was riveting. He spoke the words that we have been waiting to hear for so long. He spoke about the beauty and simplicity of Medicare for all. He spoke about having the courage to stand to the medical industrial complex, which profits at the expense of human suffering. Most importantly, Sanders spoke about the national movement for single payer being held and led by nurses, doctors, medical students, faith and labor organizations, and people across the land of all backgrounds and beliefs. He declared that this strong movement is not going away, and he announced that we will succeed. So we will remember December 16th of 2009 as a turning point in the struggle for health care justice. Single payer started this year's off the table, but the accumulating efforts of millions of people delivering it to the floor of the United States Senate to win single payer health care reform. It will take many more speeches on the floor of Congress, and the only force that will propel Congress forward is a great social movement. In 2009, we have seen that movement rising up and getting results. Every day, more people see that an effective and just health system is already at hand. A single-payer national health program modeled on the Medicare system. And every day that the White House and Congress delay single-payer reform, people suffer needlessly and die preventable deaths. Yet the Senate blunders on with a colossal gift to the insurance industry. It is time for the health of human beings to prevail. It is time to end the insurance cartel. Please join us as we continue forge the movement that we will win. Medicare for all. Onward to single payer. And on that note, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. This has been another edition of this week's Midwest Indie Media Radio Hour with your host, Zach Wright. Until again, I'll be back on next week with much, much more news and views to come. Up the Rebels, Zach Wright saying peace.
We gotta keep this all the way. We're live.
I don't mind.
T-Dot, what up?
I'm about to vibe. I don't even care how this comes out. Cause I'm just vibing.
Yo.
Life ain't the biggest female dog.
Yo.
Shit. I just want the finer things in life. You know a cool little wardrobe, fresh pair of nights. My own spot, hot meal every night. A fly little ride and a dime for a wife. Shit. I even settle for half of that. If it means I get to push a red Cadillac, life like the 92 Lakers, where the magic at? Every time I wake up, it's a tragic act. I mean, fuck waiting on this bus with my late ass, with nothing in my pocket but land in the day pass. Heading to work just to do the same tags, defined by a uniform and a name tag. Yo, where's my dignity? So I devise this intricate plan with money as my centerpiece. Then my additions, they tend to cease. Hit with bullshit every day and I just don't have the energy. So I smoke the weed and daydream on how life's supposed to be. Big house and accounts overflow with stacks. Hell yeah, my nigga, I smoked it out. I said I just smoked the weed and daydream on how life's supposed to be. Big house and accounts overflow with stacks. Hell yeah, my nigga, I smoked it out. It's tough living life with your eyes on the prize. When you work a 9-to-5 for a thriving enterprise. Who don't give a damn what you feel on the inside? Or if you even have gas money for your ride. Shit, all they know is that you better be on time. To thicken up they harvest, man, I feel retarded. I'm there every day, steady working hard. Just so they can cop the newest Benz on the market. Man, I'm blaming on Disney. Have us growing up thinking there will always be a happy ending. Until reality is hitting on your door, yelling for rent. No, when you ain't got a cent, man, this shit don't make sense. Cause if you don't make dollars, you basically don't exist. And they got a nigga pissed. It's time to fuck up the game. I mean, I shit just like Bill Gates, so why we can't eat the same, huh? So I smoke this weed and daydream on how life's supposed to be. Big house and accounts overflow with stacks. Hell yeah, my nigga, I smoked it out. Said I just smoked the weed and daydream on how life's supposed to be. Big house and accounts overflow with stacks. Hell yeah, my nigga, I smoke it.
Most of us is 9 to 5, but my dude, I'm a 12 to 8. Come to realize this shit wasn't my fate. A promise is a promise and told my cousin I take this game by the hand. Record labels trying to buy the band, still taking orders by the man. Waking up saying why and damn, test dry to land. Be the day when I'm high in demand. They love my music, drug influence. Smoke a dub but don't abuse it. Mary, where you been all my life? Used to fuck with you back then. Nights with the sack 10 sack, now my pipes got you packed in. Stay with me till we all bringin' racks in. Get as many tracks in for the time being broke from rap. Yeah, Dom, I smoke to that.
So I smoke this weed and daydream on how life's supposed to be. Big house and accounts overflow with stacks. Hell yeah, my nigga, I smoke to that. Said I just smoke the weed and daydream on how life's supposed to be. Big house and accounts overflow with stacks. Hell yeah, my nigga, I smoke to that.
Smoking, smoking.